You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good evening, everybody. This is Commander Tom Garcia, and welcome to the American Hour. Thank you for joining us tonight. The subject of our main subject of our topic tonight is the Affirmative Action President. And this is based on an article written by Matt Peterson that came out on August 18th. In the American Thinker, but in a moment we'll get back to that. Paula Luzon has been our great co-host, but she's been really busy lately, and honestly, she might be here with us tonight, except my, I don't know what you call it, my ability to look at the...
I'm here.
Paula, I knew you'd be here. I knew you'd be here. But I cannot, for the life of me, on the internet, get onto our control page. So if you're there, you should control
it. I'm here.
Okay, because I cannot control over the internet. But good. Welcome back. Everybody has missed you. I have missed you. Well, tell us what you've been doing the last couple weeks that we have had to go without your lovely presence.
Well, I've turned another page in my chapter book of life, and within the same week, I ended up in the hospital with norovirus, unfortunately.
Oh,
and now
God.
I'm dealing with the allergies that the wonderful New England weather is thrown at us. And I've been busy with some new ventures with Inventive Energy.
So tell us how that's going with Inventive Energy.
Well, it's going really good. You know, we're moving along, and we're talking to people, and we're in the middle of securing some stuff, and hopefully 2012 will be a better year for us than 2011 was.
Yeah, well, that's good. I know that you've been busy, and I've been telling everybody for the last 2 weeks that you were working on a project that was taking away from the show. And I know that probably listenership was down because once I said that, they're like, oh, well, Paula's not going to be on the show, then we don't want to listen. Yeah, so anyways, well.
I have been following the GOP prime debates and whatnot, and I'm a little perturbed and peeved about what keeps coming out of Romney's mouth, unfortunately.
Yeah, you're not the only one. Fortunately, I don't know what you want to call it. He's the one that's got the most money, so he's getting the most traction, and he's probably going to be our nominee. Of course, everybody knows that I have been throwing all of my support behind Rick Santorum. I was a regional director for the campaign in Florida, and I have to say we had a good showing. I really did not think Gingrich was going to come in ahead of Santorum in Florida, but he did. And there are reasons. I have very, very good friends that supported Newt Gingrich, but the reality is this. You can't vote for a guy just because he can debate good. He's got to be the right guy. In the primary, please vote for the right person. That's what makes the difference. And Rick Santorum is the right person. Newt Gingrich is not the true conservative. He can debate good and yeah. Except in the last couple debates, he hasn't actually been that good. So... I was actually surprised that he came in as well as he did, but he did. But Santorum still got a lot of support in Florida and did well. And the funny thing about this whole thing is Ron Paul. And I know the people that are Ron Paul supporters, and they're going to hate me, and I'm probably going to get hate mail for this and all kinds of other stuff. But every state, the polls say, oh, Ron Paul's way ahead. Remember Ron Paul was way ahead in Iowa? What'd he come in? Fourth. Ron Paul's way ahead in New Hampshire. Where'd he come in? Fourth. Ron Paul's way ahead in South Carolina. Oh, he's fourth. Ron Paul's way ahead in Florida. Oh, he's got all the Tea Partiers. He comes in behind Santorum every single time. Rick Santorum won Iowa. And I'm really, I don't know what to say about it, but, you know, Rick Santorum won Iowa, but it took 2 weeks to figure that out. So he got no momentum out of it, while Romney got all of the momentum out of it. If they had been accurate and done their jobs, Santorum would have been the winner on day one in Iowa and gotten all the momentum, and it would have helped him along down the line, but he didn't. So yeah, it is what it is. But this whole Ron Paul thing, I don't understand why the media is constantly propping up Ron Paul when he never wins anywhere, anyhow, anyway. So I understand the Ron Paul nuts that love him and on, but you're just not in the majority. That's the bottom line. And then you still hear today, oh, Ron Paul's got a lot of support in Nevada. Oh, he's got a lot of support here, there. Oh, it's going to be a broker convention. I can tell you right now, Paula, it will not be a – I'm practically going to spell it out. I'm going to say it in a stuttered way. Ron Paul is not going to cause a brokered convention. Read my lips. Ain't going to happen. He's not getting enough votes anywhere, anyhow, anyway. It isn't going to happen. So stop talking about it, media. But they make it sound like – it's almost like the media would like to see Ron Paul start winning. Because then they've got a nut job to run against Obama. That's what they want. So anytime the media is supporting or propping up a candidate, it's because the media is liberal, Marxist, socialist, leftist, and that's what they want so that they can further their agenda. Anytime the media supports anybody, if the media were supporting Abraham Lincoln or Moses today, then I would say, oh, there's a reason for it, because that's not the true conservative. That's what the media does. So this brings up an interesting point, Paula.
Uh-huh.
You know, there are a lot of people that don't like these super PACs. You know, the Supreme Court ruled that, hey, freedom of speech. You can be a company, an organization, and form a super PAC that can spend millions and millions, and there's unlimited amounts of donations. You know, a billionaire can say, here's $1 billion. And then you can run ads to infinitum for a candidate or against a candidate. Actually, you can't run it for a candidate. You can only run it against a candidate because it's free speech. So the libtards are saying, that's not fair. That's not fair. That's a violation of the Constitution. All of a sudden, they like the Constitution. Oh, that's not right. Well, what stops the libtard media from smearing Republicans and conservatives? What stops them? What says, no, you can't go? Is the liberal media, the mainstream media, biased? Absolutely. What stops them? So the reality is that these super PACs are the counter to the libtard mainstream media that has no restrictions whatsoever on them, and they, quote, report the news, but when their candidate does something stupid or says something stupid, oh, shut your mouths, don't say it, don't comment on it, don't do anything. But as soon as a Republican or conservative says something that might not be too smart, oh, we're all over it, and that's all you see all day long. There are no constraints on the libtard media, i.e., the mainstream media, but suddenly, oh, there got to be constraints on the rest of us that want to put together a coalition to counter that. Guess what? Mainstream media, libtard media, screw you. We now have a way to fight back, and that's what the super PACs are. So there you have it. There's my commentary on the, oh, the Supreme Court screwed up. No, I tell you what, the Supreme Court should have said, no corporations or super PACs. And also, the mainstream media, shut your mouths. Shut up. Stop talking, because you are biased. But, you know, that's not going to happen, because you can't constrain the media. Well, guess what? I'm the media, and you can't constrain me. So, all right, Paula, what else? You've had a couple weeks off. What are the rest of your thoughts?
It just, you know, I'm just curious as to what the outcome is going to be. I mean, it seems to be up and down for Gingrich, and like I said, every time Romney opens his mouth, it doesn't seem to be a good thing, as evidenced by his most recent comment yesterday about not being concerned about the poor people. And
well, I will tell you this right now. That was a bad thing to say. And as Rush Limbaugh said today, problem is Romney just doesn't know how to speak conservative because, quite honestly, he's not truly conservative. I'll tell you what he was trying to say, and still not a good thing, but if we were to say today, look, the economy's really bad, and the way we're going to fix things is we're going to focus on the poor. We're going to focus on the poor. I can tell you right now, Paul, that's not what's going to fix the economy. The poor are not the majority. Middle-class America is the majority. What does it take? Middle-class America.
Everybody goes out and votes. What do you think is going to happen when the poor people hear that and go, well, I'm not going to go vote then. Forget that.
Well, here's the deal. The poor people typically don't vote. They just don't. It's very hard to get – there are certain demographics that just don't vote in large numbers, and the poor do not vote in large numbers. They just don't. But middle-class America does. So that's what he was targeting, what Romney was trying to say. And I'm not trying to say it was right. Believe me, I'm not trying to say it was right. And I'm agreeing with Rush Limbaugh. Romney doesn't know how to speak conservatism. This is what I would have said. I've run a campaign. I've run for office. This is what I would have said. I would have said, the conservative platform is this. We want to lift everybody up, from the poorest of the poor to the middle class, to the upper middle class, to even the richest of the rich. The goal is to lift everybody up. If we try taking from one class and giving to the other, that has been tried and fails in all of the history of mankind. That's why the conservative position and platform is the true platform. And that is, just like our founders said and did in the beginning of the history of our nation, was everybody has an equal chance. And quite honestly, there is nothing that stops anybody from having an equal chance today. Yet, what government's job ought to be is not to take from others, to give to others, but rather to lift everybody up. And Obama, in his prayer, Christian prayers, day speech, whatever he gave, he talked about the reason he's fought for Obamacare and redistribution of wealth and on and on and on is because that's what Christ would want. Well, I can tell you this, Paula. This is why Obama is not a true Christian, because he does not understand Christianity. Christ did not go around saying, I am the Son of God, and I can force you to give your excess or give what you don't really need to others. What he preached was free will, free agency. What I want is for you to want to give, to want to help, but I can't make you do it, because if I make you do it, and that was Satan's plan, Satan's plan was, God our Father, I will bring everybody home. Not one soul will be lost, because I will force them to do what is right. But Christ said, no, I will show them the path and the light. And those that choose it are truly noble and honorable, and they should return to the kingdom of God. Those that don't choose it, well, that's their nature or whatever. I mean, I'm paraphrasing a lot of stuff here, but that was the plan. That's why Obama doesn't understand Christianity, because he's not a Christian. I'm going to say it. Yes, he is not a Christian. There is no Christian today that will say that God's plan is to force you to give your money to the poor. Christ never stood for that. Christ stood for, you need to do what is right, and you need to choose what is right. But I can't make it. If there was anybody in the history of mankind that could make everybody do what was right, it was Christ. And did Christ do that? No, he did not do that. But Obama is now taking on the role of Christ and saying, I'm going to make you do it. And that's in the name of Christ. That's why he's not a Christian. That is an abomination to the New Testament and to the life of Christ. Barack Obama, yes, is an abomination to the Word of God. And I'm going to say that today, and I will guarantee you any true Christian pastor today would agree with me. That is not the way, that is not the path. So that was Obama's latest gaffe. But if you bring that up, oh, no, Tom, you're a racist. You're just saying that because he's black. I got a word for all the rest of you people out there. You're calling Tom Garcia a racist? Guess what? If you call me a racist and I'm a, quote, Hispanic, I will never say that as a conservative, but you libtards will call me a Hispanic. I'm not a Hispanic. I'm an American. But you will call me a Hispanic. Guess what? You're a racist. You just slandered me. Therefore, you're a racist. You can't slander a Hispanic. That makes you a racist. All right. Well, anyways, here's the topic of the night, Obama, the affirmative action president. Now, I'll tell you, Paula, what the gist of this article is, and then you tell me what you think about it.
Okay.
Affirmative action has been around for a long time. And what we've done is said people of a particular color or background, well, they might not be qualified to get into a particular school by the school standards or a job standard, but because we don't have enough of them in that particular school or job or industry, we're going to force them into that school or industry. That's called affirmative action. It's affirmative. You like the terms they use? It's affirmative. It's not screw you, whitey. It's called affirmative action. It's not screw you who actually are qualified, but you don't have the right skin color or the politically correct name. Screw you. We're going to put somebody else in there, even though you're more qualified. That's called affirmative action. Well, how is it that we ended up with a president who has no actual skills, no actual resume, has never actually achieved anything? That's why we call him the affirmative action president. So you can go to American Thinker on August 18th, 2011, Matt Patterson, and this has been published in many, many publications, but you'll never see it in the mainstream media, and that's why I'm bringing it up tonight. So here we go. Years from now, historians may regard the 2008 election of Barack Obama as an inscrutable and disturbing phenomena, a baffling breed of mass hysteria akin, perhaps, to the witch craze of the Middle Ages. How, they will wonder, did a man so devoid of personal or professional accomplishment beguile so many into thinking he could manage the world's largest economy, direct the world's most powerful military, execute the world's most consequential job? Imagine a future historian examining Obama's pre-presidential life, ushered into and through the Ivy League despite unremarkable grades and test scores all along the way, a cushy job as a community organizer, a brief career as a state legislator, devoid of legislative achievement, and in fact, nearly devoid of his attention. So often did he vote present. And finally, an unaccomplished single-term United States senator, the entirety of which was devoted to his presidential ambitions. I'm now taking an aside. As a U.S. senator, he didn't do jack you-know-what. Not a thing. I can tell you this, Paula. I would have had tremendous ambition to get things done as a U.S. senator. That is one of the most powerful positions in the world, aside from the president of the United States. U.S. senator. I would have come in there guns a-blazing. And what did this guy do? Not a single thing. Most of the time, he didn't even vote. And by the way, I am sitting on my patio. It's 70 degrees in South Florida, doing this broadcast. So I don't know what it is up there in Boston or anywhere else, but I'm loving this. Loving being able to broadcast on the patio of my house. This is why I live in South Florida, because the weather's so nice. Anyway, where was I? And finally, an unaccomplished, single term as United States Senate. He left no academic legacy in academia, authored no legislation as a legislator. I can tell you what, when I ran for Congress, I already had legislation written. I already had stuff ready to go. This guy didn't do a thing. And then there is the matter of his troubling associations the white-hating, America-loathing preacher for who decades served as Obama's spiritual mentor. A real-life actual terrorist who served as Obama's colleague and political sponsor. Yeah, Bill Ayers. It is easy to imagine a future historian looking at it and asking, how on earth was such a man elected president? And I'm going to go back. I'm going to go back to this a preacher Obama sat through for 20 years. This guy is the modern-day black version of the KKK. That is the most racist church in the United States of America. Absolutely. Not content to wait for history, the incomparable Norman Podhoretz addressed the question recently in the Wall Street Journal. To be sure, no white candidate who had close associations with an outspoken hater of America like Jeremiah Wright or the KKK and an unprecedented terrorist like Bill Ayers would have lasted a single day. But because Mr. Obama was black and therefore entitled in the eyes of liberaldom to have hung out with protesters against various American injustices, even if they were a bit extreme, he was given a pass. And I just got a text from, it says David in San Diego, about your comments on Ron Powell. You know what, David, I apologize. I can't get online to bring you onto the show. Paula, is your, call screen program working at all? Because
it is.
Mine's not working at all.
Okay, are you ready to speak with him?
Yeah, did you screen? Did you screen, David?
I screen David.
Oh, it might be my good friend Dave Bull. All right, bring him on.
Hello.
Hey, Troll, how you doing? I was just going to in the beginning of this, I was going to say my good friend, and I forgot because I got on a roll there. My good friend Dave Troll, call sign Troll Bull, fighter pilot extraordinaire, Top Gun fighter pilot, just retired from the Navy on December 3rd. And congratulations on the retirement, 28 years service to this fantastic country, and 28 years of service to the Navy.
Thank you very much.
Yeah. So tell me, what would you like to say about Ron Paul, if that's what you actually called in about?
Well, I was listening because I knew you were going to be on tonight, and you were really going hard on Paul. So I was wondering if the reason for that was you were disappointed that he was having a better he's getting more press, although he didn't have as good a showing as Santorum. Or is there some particular thing you don't like about his politics? I haven't listened to some of your past broadcasts, so maybe you've already discussed this.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. That's a very good point. Ron Paul, I love as a constitutionalist. And I love Ron Paul for the fact that he understands state rights and state sovereignty. There are so many things I like about Ron Paul, but there's one thing that you and I both know very, very near and dear, and that is when he says, why do we have bases all over the world? Why do we have military deployed all over the world? Bring them all home. The reason is, and I would agree, we have too much of that overseas, but the reason we have bases and military deployed at all times is because we fight wars on other people's shores. We do not fight wars on our shores. We don't wait for the wars to come to us. We take it to them on their own shores. And he doesn't understand that. His foreign policy is abysmal. He's an isolationist, and he's extremely dangerous to our national security.
But his one first tenet of his foreign policy is, I think, probably one of the best, though, is that he believes probably one of your best portions of the foreign policy is to have a great energy policy.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. Oh, I've been saying that for years. We need our own energy. Stop buying energy from all of these foreign nations. Absolutely. And so I agree with him. I agree with a lot of what Ron Paul says. But the problem is when it comes to national security, when he makes a statement that says, hey, it's not our business whether Iran has a nuclear bomb or not, that's just plain stupid. It is our business if Iran has a nuclear bomb and a nuclear weapon that they can destroy and annihilate Israel, and then if they want to say, guess what, they've cozied up to Venezuela And Iran has been building up a missile base, yes, a missile base in Venezuela. So Iran has a missile base and now nuclear capability in Venezuela. That's the same as the Cuban Missile Crisis right there, with a country that has said we want to bring about the destruction of the world.
Yeah, very true. But I think a couple of things that you needed to mention, and I don't know if this would be my concern between those two guys. And I guess the question I was really going to get to is, don't you think it's time for Santorum to just step out?
No, I think it's time for Santorum to step up. I think it's time for Gingrich.
I mean, probably Ron Paul, too. I like to have him in there because Ron Paul brings in some ideas. I think you've probably even talked about scaling down governments. We probably could use that everywhere, at the local level, state levels, and so forth. Government's just gotten so big that they're just not functioning. And Paul understands that, and he has big, grand ideas about it, scaling it. At least he's bringing it to the forefront and putting it in to the discussion. But here we are now. We got down to, I don't know if we call Gingrich still a viable candidate or not. But the one thing that we probably ought to be asking, should Santorum and should Ron Paul continue? What do you think?
Well, I would say this. I would say Gingrich, Santorum, and Ron Paul ought to all get together, come to a consensus and get behind Romney, and then influence him and help him with the rest of the campaign. If one's going to step out, then they all need to step out. Otherwise, they can all hang into it and see what shakes out. But you're right. If they really were concerned about the future of America, then they could all get together and come to a consensus, get behind Mitt Romney, and then. But at the same time, Mitt, you're gonna have to agree to some concessions because we all have strong points. Ron Paul, Gingrich, Santorum all have some very, very good conservative strong points, and get Mitt to concede to those and say, we will now support you, but you're now going to also work with us on these issues, then yes, then all of a sudden the fighting is over and we can move forward.
Then what would
that happen?
What would their strong points be?
Is a social conservative. Santorum is very, very strong on national security. Ron Paul, weak on national security, but very, very strong on national economics, the Fed, and, domestic issues. Gingrich, very, very good on domestic issues. Well, I take that back. Not so much domestic issues, but the overall conservative platform. There are some issues I take huge umbrage with Gingrich, like illegal immigration. He's an apologist and an amnesty proponent. And I cannot stand for that. I can't even stomach that. Ron Paul is not an amnesty apologist, so that's good. Santorum is absolutely not. So they all have different strong points, but none of them are the true conservative that I know the Tea Partiers or, and I am, consider myself a Tea Partier, but I also consider myself a pure constitutionalist. And those of you out there that say, oh, the Constitution, it's too old. No, it's just like the Ten Commandments. It was written to prevent us and protect us from human nature. Human nature. And what is human nature? Lust for power and lust for things that destroy the values of this country. That's what our Constitution was written to prevent. And that's all I care about is the Constitution. You and I took an oath of office. I did a couple times, maybe you did a couple times, that not only said that we would protect and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic, but the next, very next line is that we would bear true faith and allegiance to the same. And that's what this president has not done. True faith and allegiance means I believe in it and I will follow it. And that's what we need is a president that believes in the Constitution and will follow it.
Yeah, probably even more so. I mean, it's kind of a very simplistic statement, but more so as someone that actually understands it. And I'm not so sure that all the candidates on the Republican side truly understand the Constitution either.
No. Now, there's a difference between understanding it and there's a difference between despising it. And this president has already made it clear he despises it. He violates it on a daily, weekly, if not monthly basis. And he's made it clear in the past that he does not want to follow it, and he despises the Constitution. He does not think it's a valid document.
I would probably, I mean, that's a harsh statement, Diego. I would probably say more he's of a revisionist mindset. And it's not uncommon. You see revisionists in a lot of different forums, biblical revisionists, constitutional revisionists, revisionists at local levels, where they think that documents of old need to be revised to newer thoughts and so forth. And
I'll tell you this. In 2003, in a radio interview, he said that the Constitution is a great document, except, and then he went into all of his exceptions. Here's the deal. The Constitution is.
But see, then that's what I'm saying, is that he would come back and say, I believe in the Constitution. I think the Constitution is a great framework, but I do believe we have room for revision. I'm not supporting that nor advocating that, but I think that's probably where
you know what? Revision is okay. How do you revise the Constitution? How do you revise it?
Well, you change it to however. Well, I'm not a revisionist, but I think the gist of it is you have to amend it. I mean, we have revised it like
Twenty some times.
Yeah, well,
the Constitution can be revised
via
amendments.
I'm sorry?
The Constitution can be revised via amendments.
Right.
And who gets to amend the Constitution? The people. But what this president stands for is revising it via presidential fiat. Let me give you a couple examples. He claims the right to assassinate any American citizen he chooses without charges or trial. He's already done that. He claims the right to put any American in a military prison without charges or trial. He claims the right to appoint to government anyone he chooses by bypassing the Senate, even when they're in session. He's cracked down on government employees that have leaked the press via, like, for example, Fast and Furious. He claims the right to start any war he chooses. We went into Libya. He had no presidential authority to go into Libya and take any action. Oh, no boots on the ground. Now, you and I are both naval aviators. Are we boots on the ground when we're flying in enemy territory and getting shot at? No, we're not a boot on the ground, but the Constitution doesn't say anything about boots on the ground. It says putting soldiers and military in harm's way. He has absolutely no authority to do that. He's violated the Constitution repeatedly. And it's got nothing to do with any authority that he has under the Constitution. It's all by presidential fiat. And so when he says that, we need to improve on the Constitution, great. Then you can advise the Congress to pass legislation to amend the Constitution, and then the states have to ratify it. That's the process. Only the people can alter the Constitution. Only the people. So, yes, you can say you don't like the Constitution. Well, then, great. There's a process to follow, and he has not followed. He has violated it.
Right. But here's my point, is that he is a revisionist. He still believes, and I agree with your point on there is a proper platform that has been established for revising the Constitution through the amendment process, et cetera. But a revisionist is a revisionist. A revisionist is looking to revise whatever manuscript, theory, policy, belief, and he will revise it in any method that he can. And so I'm not, when I call someone a revisionist or I use that statement, he's going to be revising it in however fashion that he wants to do it. And can still claim that I am a constitutionalist.
Well, no, he can't. No, nobody can claim they're a constitutionalist unless they believe in what the founders put in place. If they want to revise it, then they are not a constitutionalist, but they are a revisionist, but they still have to follow the rule of law, and this president has not followed the rule of law.
I think you and
Therefore,
I agree.
He's not a revisionist. He's a tyrant.
Probably so.
If you don't follow
but I think
the rule
you and I are
law,
agreeing. I'm just saying that if I'm a revisionist and I decide to that it's to my best interest to be able to go out and state that I still believe in the contract that I'm revising, I will make that statement. So if I find that it's advantageous or politically astute to say I'm a constitutionalist, yet I really don't feel that way or I think it needs to be revised, I can still go about and call myself a constitutionalist. Doesn't necessarily mean I am, but have main motive or some of my motives being toward revising that document or that contract. And I was saying that. Anyway, I got you off point.
Well, you know, you made a very good point, actually. You're exactly right. The president is a revisionist.
Good.
Claims to be a constitutionalist.
Yes, I can claim to be a constitutionalist, but I may not truly be a constitutionalist.
Right.
I can claim that I'm a constitutionalist, but in my heart feel like it needs to be changed. And I don't necessarily like the way that the change process is that's in place, so I'm going to use other methods. It's almost that, you know, ask forgiveness later.
Right. So what you're saying is exactly what he is. He's a liar, and he's violating the Constitution. Yeah. You just made the case for exactly what Obama is. And I know you don't agree with it, but he's a liar, and he violates the Constitution to achieve his means. That's what the libtards do. They hate the Constitution. They'll claim they're constitutionalists, but they will violate it left and right, and they will find every way they can to get around it in order to change it in any way they can. And you just made the case exactly for that because they're revisionists, and yet they claim to be constitutionalists, which make them liars. They are all liars.
So how come no one called them
liars? And they have violated their oaths of office. Their oaths of office says, no, I believe in it, and I will follow it, and yet they do not. And therefore, they have not only lied, but they have violated their oaths of office, something that you and I never did.
No. True. But how come no one's calling him on it?
Oh, because anybody that calls him on it will be called a racist. That's the whole thing. That's why I call him on it. Yeah, I call him on it all the time. I will call him a racist. But Barack Obama is a racist. He is an absolute racist. He went to a racist church for 20 years. His church that he attended is the modern-day equivalent of the KKK, except on the black end of it. He is a racist, and I have plenty of friends that are Republicans, that used to be Democrats, and are black, and they call him a racist as well. He is a racist. Barney Frank is a racist. Jesse Jackson is a racist. They're all racist. And yet at the same time, all they do is harm their own so-called race. I am sick and tired of talking about colors and races. We are Americans, and we have a rule of law, and it's called the Constitution. Follow it or get out of the way. And if you don't get out of the way, that means you are opposing the Constitution, and you took an oath of office to not oppose it. Therefore, you are violating it.
Now,
so.
Diego, those are strong words. So,
they are strong words, and I stand by them, and I will take anybody on by them. They are absolute racists. Well, let's go back a little bit to this article that we were talking about. Obama was given a pass, held to a lower standard because of the color of his skin. I believe that. That's what affirmative action is. Affirmative action says you're not qualified, but because of the color of your skin or your last name, your name ends in a vowel like my name, Garcia, and ends in an A, we're going to give you a pass. And what is the success rate of people that are of affirmative action, doesn't matter what, you know, black, green, brown, yellow, et cetera, what is the success rate of affirmative action folks, whether it be, and you and I saw it, in the military, in colleges, et cetera, it's a very high failure rate. Affirmative action fails. But some of them get through. So that's
now,
what
now, were
my
you a product
case
of affirmative action?
No, I'm not a product of affirmative action. I don't believe so. Maybe I am. I don't know. But, you know, I got into the Naval Academy based on my grades, and I was a varsity athlete and an Eagle Scout, as long as some other things that I achieved. And, you know, there aren't a lot of people that apply to the Naval Academy from Arizona. You know, there were a lot of the folks that were in my class and company in the Naval Academy came from the very area. Maryland, Virginia, you know, the Northeast, the Middle East, whatever you want, Middle East, that's not the right word to say, but, you know, in that area because they know about the Naval Academy. But people out in Arizona, Tucson, Arizona, they don't know about it. And, in fact, one of my classmates from my very high school also got into the academy the very same year. So two of us from the very same high school. He was a varsity athlete, not only a track athlete, but a basketball player, and he basically sort of got in on a basketball scholarship, if you'd say, and he also had very high grades. So, but he was not a minority. I I guess you could say was a minority, but you don't get very many people like that at the Naval Academy. So, yeah, they're looking for folks from a variety of backgrounds. The military academies are always looking for a cross mixture of people of different backgrounds. And yet, even in my own class, a large number of people came from the East Coast because they know what the Naval Academy is.
But I've seen you fly, so I've always thought that you must have been some sort of product of affirmative action.
Yeah, well, that's another story. We don't want to bring that up. Just because I always kicked your ass in dogfighting doesn't mean that I was affirmative action. I mean, it just means,
you know. I didn't get quite to draw the parallel from President Obama's church affiliation to the point where you can say he's a racist. Other than, I guess, yeah, we know about the pastor there.
How can you sit in a place like that for 20 years? How do you sit in that pew for 20 years listening to that spew? I mean, you and I would go to that church for one day and go, I'm not coming back to this. Nobody except a racist tends to.
I don't know if a white person would have felt comfortable in that. That church, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing or a good thing, but I'm not also don't necessarily believe that means it's a racial church.
It is a racial church. I've seen,
but I would have to almost have to. I don't like that the things that come out, but you know, it's like everything. You don't know the full story, but you would have to give me something else other than that as evidence that points to a person being racist.
Okay, well, let's not talk about races, but let's talk about this. How about this? Unfortunately, minorities often suffer so that whites can pat themselves on the backs. Liberals routinely admit minorities to schools for which they're not qualified, yet take no responsibility for the inevitable poor performance and high dropout rates which follow. Liberals don't care if these minorities' students fail. Liberals aren't around to witness the emotional devastation and deflated self-esteem resulting from the racist policy that is affirmative action, yet racist. Holding someone to a separate standard merely because of the color of their skin, that's affirmative action in a nutshell. And if it isn't racism, then nothing is. And that is what America did to Obama. Obama himself was never troubled by his lack of achievement, but why would he be? As many have noted, Obama was told he was good enough for Columbia, despite undistinguished grades at Occidental. He was told he was good enough for the U.S. Senate, despite a mediocre record in Illinois. He was told he was good enough to be president, despite no record in the Senate. All his life, every step of the way, Obama was told he was good enough for the next step, in spite of ample evidence to the contrary. What could this breed if not the sort of empty narcissism on display every time Obama speaks? He was always good enough for everything he did, even though he was never qualified.
You know, it brings up a whole thing of the qualification, especially when you speak about narcissism, and then you throw in senators. One thing I've always, and this might take us in another discussion, and then I'll let you go, but should we ever elect a senator to a position of president? And let me amplify a little bit, because I always hear these things, even your friend, and I don't know if he's your friend, I keep throwing out there, Santorum. I listen to these guys, and I hear them say, I led or I did, and I can't think of anything that a senator leads.
Right.
He doesn't ever have to make any decisions that really have major ramifications to him or people that he is leading. They're voters. And a lot of times they don't even vote when they're supposed to vote. And I don't see where there's any leadership qualities from a person that's in a senatorial position, which always I think that we make big mistakes when we put candidates up that are senators. And you can say the same thing from congressmen.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're not a leader just because you're elected off. Absolutely, you're not a leader. And this is one of the reasons that I state frequently on this show. We need to elect more career military officers to the office of Senate and U.S. Congress because they have actual leadership skills. And when it comes to, and this is one of my pet peeves, budget process for the military, when these amendments and crap get piled on to a defense authorization bill that have nothing to do with the defense of our nation, that have nothing to do with the military, if we had more career military officers that would say, no, I vote no. Nobody could say, oh, you don't support the troops. I was a troop, and I can tell you this right now. As a career military officer who took the oath of office to support and defend the Constitution and bear true faith and allegiance to the same, I would be willing to not have what I need in the military to do my job just to say no to suppressing and stopping and controlling the constitutional rights of our U.S. citizens, because that's my sole purpose as serving in the military. And nobody could ever question them on that. But we don't have enough career military officers serving in the Congress and the Senate.
Well, what we don't have is people that are willing to stand up and say the facts of the fact. In the scenario that you just stated, what a guy needs to just say, I don't support the bill as it is written. I support, and this is our slimy politics that we live under right now, is that, yes, if I can get what I really want or I need, and I don't know if it's servanthood, if you're serving those, you know, maybe I've got some little thing in my district that I want done that maybe will bring in some employment to people that I know no one else is going to support in the Senate. You know, and bills don't come out of the Senate. They come out of the House. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to try to attach that through some politicking, association with the guy that wrote the original bill, and I'm going to say, can I attach this little thing onto your military bill because I know your military is popular? What we need is people that can stand up and say, no, I don't associate or I don't support that bill as written. And here's why. We've added this stuff that is unnecessary or I don't feel that is pertains to what the title of the bill is. If you want that in a congressional vote, put it in a separate bill. But we don't do that. Our senators don't do that. That's what we've kind of lived with. But I think part of it is, you and I have the big feelings on leadership, and I think we do have people that probably step into those positions. Let me throw you another thing. This is the thing I think, I'm calling you from completely different coast, and I think this is something that we really suffer here in California. It's just that we have allowed politics to become a career. I'm of mind that I think being a politician should never be a career. And you could go back historically, and most often it wasn't. We still have a lot of states. I grew up in Wyoming. People that were in the assemblies or the state senate, state houses were not career politicians. They had other jobs that were their livelihood. But yet they were willing to step up for a certain amount of time and help serve the community that they live in a political fashion. But they had no ambitions. But what we have bred today, especially in California, is people that is their aspiration. I want to be a politician. So once I get elected, what do I got to do to stay in this career? And most often it's to write a bill. And now that these things are starting to come to limelight, and you look at all the silly bills that get written out here and passed, so forth, for whatever reason, most of the time, it's just so that some assemblyman can hold that up at election time and say, look, I had this bill passed, I had this bill passed, I had this bill passed, I had this bill passed. Becomes very self-serving, politicians. So back to my thought, what do you think about, wouldn't it be great if you are a state assemblyman, state senator, or state house member, and you only got maybe $7,000 a year, and you are only on the hook to go down to wherever the state capitol is so many times a year? It would really cut down on a lot of unnecessary bills, because people just say, oh, we don't have time for all that. And then you'd have people that would actually be serving to do something good. We're only going to write bills. We're only going to pass things that really need to be passed. And, oh, by the way, I've got another job. And, in fact, maybe I'm looking forward to this time as a House representative to end. That's where politics, I think, is really taking a bad steer. Then you get guys like Newt Gingrich and everybody that are going to always be associated, and I'm not bashing Newt, but this is what it is. They're always going to be associated with government. And what do they bring to the table? government experience.
Right.
And I'm not necessarily saying that's good. And then we're willing to all of a sudden take candidates and say, all right, he must be a leader because he's a senator, which is not true. In fact, it's a big fallacy. There's no senator I've ever met that has ever led anything. He's just voted. And they always like to say, well, I led the push to get this bill passed. He didn't lead anything. Maybe you did some arm wrestling, or maybe you did some negotiating or stuff like that to get some other people to go along with your bill. Or maybe you allowed them to put in your little, you know, town improvement bill. But did I lose you, Diego?
No, you got me. I'm agreeing with you on every aspect of that. You're absolutely right. And that's the biggest reason for term limits. You know,
you may not want to go this direction, but how about not putting back in the, I think it was the 17th Amendment, when a state senator had responsibility to his state government, his
right.
assembly members. Because right now, my state senators are so far distanced from me, there is zero representation that I get out of a senator. And most states are that way. Because most states have two senators, they all have two senators. So what representations do I get from that person? Probably none.
No, and you're absolutely right. I've stood for the repeal of the 17th Amendment because senators no longer represent the state. And you know why that happened? It wasn't a power grab by the federal government. The states didn't want that responsibility. They wanted to get rid of it. They passed the buck. But now that the states have passed the buck, they're paying the price for it because nobody represents them. So the question is, who represents you? Who represents you, David Bohl, in Florida? Well, you have a representative. You have one representative. But your senator...
My representative, this is what I'm saying, if we would go back, I like that style of, and maybe there's some reasons I don't know, you know, I'm probably very ignorant in a lot of this, but I like that style of representation. I've got a member here I got a person that is in my district, and it's a smaller district, certainly smaller in a state, smaller in a county, it's a small area that a guy represents in the House of Representatives. He is supposed to be accountable and reachable by me, and that varies. But most often, yes. Now, you take a state senator, and we're so confused about that now because people are like, what does a state senator do? It's like you're saying, he represents the state. But how does he represent the state?
Well,
if I call him up or I send him an email,
he
is he really concerned or she? Probably not.
I'll tell
you,
they're
mostly worried about big donors, big money people, and it's a cush job. You get elected to it, you're there for a while, and then once you're an incumbent, it is very hard to unseat you.
Right. Well, here's who the senators, the federal senators represent. They represent the federal government. They don't represent the state. They don't represent you because the state is way too big to represent you and your specific interests in your district. They now represent, but stay on the line here because Paula, is Marcel still on the line? I apologize. I can't bring up the call center at all, but we had Marcel calling in. Is he still on the line, Paula?
Yes, he is.
Okay, let's bring Marcel on and see what he has to say.
I can get off, Diego, if you need
no,
to get
stay,
off.
No, stay. You can stay. We can have as many as we want. Marcel, are you there?
I'm here.
Yeah, what did you have to say?
Well, I was I'm kind of getting angry and kind of like agreeing with you all guys all at the same time. I think the problem with government is, as you said, there's too many career politicians. There's too many politicians in there who are in there. In my opinion, they're in there because of crony capitalism, because they're in there to do the biddings of corporations and other special interests. That's what we need to remove out of office, and then maybe we'll have more. Maybe there will be more things in there that will be more conducive to us as Americans.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. We've got to get rid of these, and I think that's what Dave is talking about. We've got to get rid of these career politicians, and I think term limits are the only way to do it. And I understand if you have a senator or a congressman that represents you and you really like them, it's not about getting rid of somebody that you like. It's about me getting rid of your loser representative and not having career representatives. Absolutely. We need citizens representing us. The problem is, and I experienced this in my own congressional race, is that you've got to have money. If you can't raise the money, you can't get elected. It doesn't matter how good your message is, you've got to reach the uninformed masses. So we have to come up with a way of restructuring the election process that stops career politicians, there you have term limits, but then allows the citizen to run. At the same time, we can't just make it a free-for-all because you'd have 500 people in the race. I don't know what the answer is, but there's got to be a middle ground that says you can't necessarily be a rich guy.
Well, see, I think the middle ground is right now it's the internet. Why can't you just put out weekly YouTube videos or be on Blog Talk every day, you know, preaching your message? I mean, yeah, it's painstaking work, but it would be the equivalent of you going around to each little town in your state, you know, and preaching and saying the same thing, except now you're saying it to the entire world and your state.
Well, you're right. You're right. The problem is the masses, the uninformed masses, don't watch YouTube, and they're not going to take the time to go look at it.
Well, the uninformed masses actually do watch YouTube. I mean, there's a lot of dumb shit on YouTube that gets a million hits a week. I'm pretty sure that if you make it so that it's appealing to them, I mean, appealing to them with a message, I'm pretty sure you will get a million hits and people will go vote for you.
Well, it's not that easy. And because I've experienced it firsthand. I did that in my congressional race, and I did all kinds of YouTube videos, and we got hits, but, you know, it doesn't go viral unless somebody wants to go viral, and yet the masses, I'll tell you this right now, where did I get the majority of my masses' votes? It was the TV ads that I ran in the last 3 weeks of my campaign. And I didn't have the money. I did not have enough money to run enough ads. But if I had the money, I could have reached a lot more people, and it was television that got me the majority of my votes.
But pretty soon television is about to be a dead thing. So what I'm saying is the internet and the YouTubes and the, you know, websites, that's about to be the new thing in the next 5 years. TV is about to go to the wayside, like the VCR.
I agree, but even though once the internet is the way to go, you still got to pay to get ads out there. Yes, YouTube is free and other things are free. I'm not disagreeing with you. I like your idea and your concept, but the problem is the masses, you know, look at all the seniors. Look at all the people that just go on TV and they watch, you know, their favorite TV show. And because of the internet, and we when we do watch something at home, quite honestly, you know, it's internet, Netflix, and that kind of stuff. But to get the ads out there, it's a difficult thing. So you're on the right area, you're on the right way, the right idea, and I agree with you. But it's still a problem. You've got to reach the masses, and it takes money to reach the masses. Go ahead.
Hey, I'm going to bring us back to, because I like the, the gentleman's name from Marcel. I like that. Crony capitalism, stuff like this. Let me ask you, because you ran a race and you've had that experience and so forth. Were you going to quit your day job?
I was ready to quit my day job. I was ready to retire from the airline and then do that full time if I got elected.
What if I told you we've changed the rules and you aren't going to get, I don't know what were you running for, House?
Yeah, yes.
So say you get a congressional seat, and I tell you, you know what? We have changed the rules. You only get paid $30,000 a year to be a House member. Would you quit your day job? Would you still have run?
Well, I was in position, yes, I still could have done it, but you're right. That's what the state legislators go through. Many of them still maintain their state job, but as you said earlier, if you make
it a job, I think that should be a mandatory thing. My point was, and it also got to where Marcel was talking about crony capitalism. You get crony capitalism because we get professional politicians. I didn't know you. My first assumption would be, okay, here's a guy that's getting in this because he either wants the prestige, he wants the accolades, or that is his aspiration for a career. And those are wrong motives for political government. This is my opinion. You know, I'm not want to speak for everybody. But I think that's what really hurts us, because then you have people that are, okay, I have made this decision in my life. This is going to be my job. This is going to be my career. So I'm willing to do anything. I'll be a congressional member now. You know what? I want a little more job. I was going to say satisfaction, but that's not the word I was looking for. So I'll switch to Senate. You know what? I'm doing pretty good in Senate. I've been here. I've been on a lot of committees. I keep getting reelected, and it's very hard to unseat me just because I have name recognition, and I have done some great work for some lobbyists. And since I've got these lobbyists, they're going to help me get reelected. And now, you know what? Maybe I will go out and seek the presidency. Or, lo and behold, for some reason, I get beat in one of my elections. You know what else is available to me? I'll just turn around and become a lobbyist myself.
See, that's the problem right there.
Well, first of all, let me tell you this. First of all, guys, listen. We already have cronyism at the state level, and our state legislators are only required to work a minimal number of days while they still maintain their full-time jobs. We already have it at the state level. So it's a problem. Even if you say you have a minimal number of days, we still have cronyism at the state level.
But I would like to compare it, you know, and maybe I'm not on to the right thing, but I would like to compare it to a – from state to state. It'd be interesting to compare the states that have it. You could just look at their budgets. You could look at their surplus, how they're running their, you know, you could look at how many laws they passed. I would like to compare that. You're right. There's probably cronyism, and you're never going to get rid of a lot of that. But I would like to compare state by state. Wouldn't it be interesting? And it's probably been done. It's probably documentation out there.
Look, I can tell you, here's one of the most important things that I learned.
Well, Florida like that?
Yes. Yes, and that's one of the most important things that I learned in my U.S. congressional race was as I looked at and began to understand the state legislature, that the corruption and what the state is doing to us as a citizen is beyond anything most people understand, because most of us can't even name our state legislator or our state senator, and they are getting away with murder. And the cronyism and the corruption is unbelievable at the state level. And
yeah,
we have term limits. We have term limits in Florida, and we have a limited number of days that they're required to actually work. So it's a good idea in theory, but it still creates a level of cronyism and corruption that will be retained. So it's a difficult problem to overcome.
What
yet
cronyism?
We need to overcome it.
Well, what are your examples?
Oh my
gosh. Examples. I live in a state
okay,
where they're
I'll
professional
give you a
career
right
politicians.
Now.
And what
here,
my thing is that what I see is they have no they don't feel like, or at least I don't feel that they have real allegiance to the people that they represent. Their allegiance is to their career aspirations. We're seeing it now. You know, a guy comes and people do checks in the block. I want to be, you know what's in vogue right now? Military. So if you want to be a politician, by God, go out there, join the reserves, or sign up, do your first little hitch, and come back and say, yep, I was in Afghanistan or I was in Iraq. That's your check one. Then you go get associated with, you know, some political affiliation, and you help campaigns, and then you run yourself. And I see it all the time in California. The next step is to get into the assembly. So you get into the assembly, and then start looking into your local government, maybe mayor. Or if you can get some name recognition, then you start looking at the U.S. congressional or the U.S. seat. But, you know, I don't know. I think it's just that we really need to look back, and it probably goes more back to our discussion about constitutionalism and how the first founding fathers set up the political, you know, spectrum. And you're right. There's cronyism and so forth everywhere. But
the problem is you can't dictate what somebody can run for. You can't say, well, you've never held a state position, therefore you can't run for a federal position. You can't say that. And so it's a complicated issue. I think that
– no, I'm just saying if you can make it not so appealing
well,
as a career.
Well, here's how you make it not so appealing. No pension. Half the pay.
Right. And term limits. That's you got to do every. You got to go down all those roads to make it not appealing, and then you finally start to get some citizens that are running for the right reasons. But you're absolutely right. And as Marcel said, and I've said this for several years now, I think that the technology of the internet eventually will lead us to the point where even the average citizen, the uninformed mass, can just go online very easily and quickly and do a very quick comparison of the candidates, just like we do, you know, when you want to buy a car or a new refrigerator or a new TV, you do a quick some comparisons and you look through some customer reviews and you quickly go, okay, this is the TV I'm going to buy. This is now there are going to be some sort of niche companies.
Yeah.
They're going to put that information out there and they're nonpartisan. They're just going to say, hey, what is your what are your preferences? What are you looking for? Boom, here's what you're looking for. And allow the masses in a very – but it's going to have to be very simplified because really, quite honestly, the uninformed masses just don't spend very much effort. They just watch the CNN sound bites. They watch the commercials that are coming across the TV, and they make their decisions based on that. That's what the masses do because you can win over the Tea Party.
Right.
You can win over this special interest group. But
right.
They are not the masses, and we've got to figure out a way to reach the masses with quality information to allow them to make quality decisions. And I think the technology eventually will get us there, but today it's not quite there.
Hey, Diego, it's been fun. I got to run the Boy Scouts now, my
yeah.
boy.
All right. Thanks,
I mean,
Dave.
I got to go for one.
In.
I got to switch mindset, man, and start thinking about camping and
right,
like that.
Yeah.
So,
it's
but
time
enjoyed
to
it.
Go back to reality. And all right, thanks for calling in, Dave. Hey, Marcel, what do you think about our discussion?
Man, this is a good discussion. I mean, it's no, you know, all the other shows, the conservative shows on Blog Talk, they can get kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Excuse my language. They can be assholes.
Yeah.
About
oh,
their
yeah,
opinion.
Yeah. No, we want this is my goal, and this is what our goal was in the beginning, to have a quality discussion based on the Constitution, because I believe that's the rule of law. And honestly, I don't know of anybody today that's smarter than Thomas Jefferson or James Madison or Ben Franklin. They were smart, smart men and very, very educated, not only just for their day, but for life. And if we can just look to them for some advice, and they gave us a lot of advice back then. They told us where this was all going to go, and it has gone that direction. But I love your idea about, you know, technology and the internet and how we can utilize that in the future. We're not quite there, but hopefully, maybe in the next generation, we can get to that point where we are finally informed masses, just like we are when it comes to being consumers. I think today, and I think you would agree with me, Marcel, that today we're pretty well-informed consumers. We don't buy stuff that's crap anymore. We buy good stuff. We don't want to waste our money. And now what we have to do is get to the point where we use the internet to make sure that we don't waste our vote. What do you say
no,
about
that? Of course.
That?
I think that's – you know what? That's a great point you brought up. We don't have – we're now more well-informed consumers. I think we need to be more well-informed voters. Like, there's one person in the race. You guys talked earlier about the candidates in the primaries. I can't stand Rick Santorum or Newt Gingrich because I'm well-informed about them, and I'm like, I'm not with these guys. Ron Paul, iffy with me, and Mitt Romney is still iffy, but I'm now a well-informed voter. So when I go to the polls, I know who I'm going to vote for. And I think that's the same thing that needs to happen within the next generation, is that we need to build more well-informed people. And that's another reason yeah. why, and that's a reason why I was against the SOPA bill, because it just gave the government way too much power to businesses to say, well, if we don't agree with that, we can shut it down by saying, oh, there's some piracy right here on this site.
Right.
And it could be just
yeah.
be linked to a story about piracy that links another
exactly.
that links to a pirated site. You know, that's not building well-informed voters. That's building more well-informed consumers.
Right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's we cannot give government that kind of power. Absolutely. All right, Marcel. Well, we're going to finish up the show here. We really appreciate you calling in. Thanks for calling in. Call in again in the future because you got some great ideas. And we're going to finish up the show here now with the rest of the show. But yeah, hey, thanks, Marcel. Appreciate it, Paula.
No problem.
Thanks, Marcel.
let's just, I'm going to finish this up by going over the rest of this article. In 2008, many who agreed that Obama lacked executive qualifications nonetheless raved about his oratory skills, intellect, and cool character. Those people, conservatives included, ought now to be deeply embarrassed. The man thinks and speaks in the hoariest of cliches. And that's when he has his teleprompter in front of him. When his prompter is absent, he can barely think or speak at all. And I've said that in the past. When he doesn't have his teleprompter, it's like, oh, man, I hate hearing that stuff. You know, if you're going to speak, don't be saying, every other word. No original idea has ever come out of this president. It's all warmed over Marxism of a kind that has failed over and over again for 100 years. Now, I'm going to come down to the author's note of this article, and I'm going to go back up real quickly and tell you who this is. Matt Patterson, the affirmative action president. He's got some notes at the end of this article, sort of follow-up notes. He said, a lot of readers have written in asking me how I came to the conclusion that Obama was an unremarkable student and that he benefited from affirmative action. Number one, as reported by the New York Sun, a spokesman for the university, Brian Connolly, confirmed that Mr. Obama spent 2 years at Columbia College and graduated in 1983 with a major in political science. He did not receive honors. In spite of not receiving honors as an undergrad, Obama was nevertheless admitted to Harvard Law. Why? Number two, Obama himself has written he was a poor student as a young man. As the Baltimore Sun reported, Obama's book, Dreams of My Father, the president recalled a time in his life when he started to drift away from the path of success. I learned not to care, Obama wrote. Pot had helped, and booze, maybe a little blow when you could afford it. But his mother confronted him about his behavior. Do you think that you're being a little casual about your future? She asked him, according to his book. One of your friends was just arrested for drug possession. Your grades are slipping. You haven't even started on your college applications. Number three, the most damning to me is the president's unwillingness to make his transcripts public. If Obama had really been a stellar student with impeccable grades as an undergrad, is there any doubt that he would have made public by now and trumpeted on the front page of the New York Times as proof of his brilliance? To me, it all adds up to affirmative action. Now, I can tell you this. If you want to go look at my grades and transcripts at the United States Naval Academy, I came in at the bottom of my class. But the one thing I have in my favor is I then went on to have a very, very good career in the military. I stood out in the military, and I could give, if I were running for president, I would give you transcripts of my fitness reports throughout my military career that showed that I was a hard-working military officer as well as a very talented fighter pilot. And I actually achieved something that this president has never achieved. I accomplished something. And that's what I'm looking for in a president. Somebody that has actually accomplished something. Not somebody that voted president in their state senate and voted president repeatedly in the U.S. Senate and then somehow got elected because, I'm a good speaker and, by the way, I happen to be black. That's affirmative action. All right. We had a good discussion. Some good give and take tonight, and I thank my good friend Dave Bohl, fighter pilot extraordinaire, and just recently retired from the United States Navy. Thank you, Dave, for your service to this country. He actually flew in combat in support of our country in Iraq, and he is a war hero in my book. Paula, I will give you the last word. And you're going to have to take us out with the because I still cannot bring up the studio page on the internet. I don't know what it is. I've tried everything I can. So you're going to have to take us out with our end of the show music, if you will do that for us, please. But I'll give you the last word.
That's fine. Don't worry about it. I just want to wish everybody a good rest of your week, and to the troops that are serving overseas, specifically in Afghanistan, your families love and miss you dearly and are looking forward to having you home real soon.
All right, thanks, Paula. We'll see you next week. And, by the way, Susan Bradford is going to start broadcasting in the next couple weeks? Not me.
You're listening to The American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.